When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
You're listening to Friends from Work.
Shh, ladies and gentlemen, this is your Captain Bo DeMeo speaking. We're coming in for what should be a very smooth landing here on the series finale. So just enjoy the view and enjoy the trip. Shh. Oh, they did it! Yes!
Wow, I did not know where we were going there. I love that. More of that.
The plane has been landed officially, in my opinion.
Oh, dude.
Welcome.
What a finale.
To Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Scunnell, and Robbie Earle. This is as excited as I've been to do an episode since, and I'm not going to quantify it, but I'm very excited.
I think for me, it's probably since the Loki finale.
Did you like my plane analogy?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. Well, honestly, and now every time I try to say like land the plane, I've got like Paul Rudd's voice in my head, but you do land planes, all right? Like they do have to land. So, but I was talking with someone this morning before I got to watch the episode, and I was just saying, you know, I feel like the first two parts of this three-part finale have been pretty excellent, and it seems like it's heading towards that, but like, you know, and this is not just a Disney thing. This is just in general. Like the finale sure. is... Like you kind of have to hold your breath a little bit because there's just a lot that has to happen because you're not just ending a three episode arc. You're ending a whole season. And in some ways with a show like this, you're kind of trying to follow up on threads from a series decades ago and kind of set up another season of this series. There was like he just had a lot of, I say he with Bo, but the entire team had a lot to juggle here, and
it was a masterpiece. Man, that was a masterpiece,
dude. The whole, like, now that we're at the end of it, and I don't want to, you know, we'll have a reflection episode on the season as a whole, so I don't want to do too much of that today, but it is nice being at the end and being able to look back and see that.
Samwise agrees.
Samwise,
as he walks in,
his nemesis is a closed door. It's just nice being able to look back and see this totally complete, consistently excellent series. Like, you know, you and I have ranked episodes, and there were episodes that were more our favorites and less our favorites, but I don't think that there was ever a point in this entire season where you and I got nervous or like uncomfortable with some kind of quality drop. Like I love that we can now, like, this is another example of something where you can tell someone, you know, to the extent that they're interested in watching an animated series, like, hey, this entire series is just like no qualifiers, no disclaimers, just top tier stuff.
Here's what I know. I said this last week. I am not typically invested into as many animated things. I also just didn't grow up watching a lot of cartoons. It's not my background. And the X-Men are not my background. I will say this entire journey is really becoming additive that we've been on just because, yes, we are so immersed in the X-Men world right now and all the stuff going on in Friends From Work Plus, but it is all working. Like, it's adding up to certain things. Like, I'm now getting like an Easter egg in this series from something that I'm now recognizing from the live action X-Men thing. And I would have never caught that before. And like, Cable was such a dope character in this series, but specifically in this finale, that now I'm actually super pumped to see Cable in Deadpool. Cause I know Cable's in Deadpool, but I know nothing of it. But like, he was a badass here. Here's what I know. I'm not kidding. I mean, again, I think sometimes in the morning it's a little bit different. And if you've been busy or like you're tired, it's different. But I'm sitting here at my studio right now. I have two screens. I got three screens, but I have two I'm watching this on. And I have really nice speakers and a subwoofer right here. And I just watched this episode this morning by myself sitting here in darkness. And I was legitimately choked up. Like in the Toy Story 3 type thing when the asteroid's going down and they're all kind of like doing their job and holding hands.
Yeah.
Like I was legitimately choked up when Nightcrawler was praying with Charles and Eric. I'm not speechless, but for an animated show about the X-Men, I can't always say animated because Across the Spider-Verse made me feel this way as well. That's like probably the pinnacle of how I can feel emotionally attached to something that's animated. That's probably the top for me. Almost certainly that and Toy Story 3, like I always reference, but like this different kind of animation, this being a different kind of animation in X-Men, I did not think I would ever get to a point just personally where I cared enough that I'd be choking up in the finale. And that's not even the takeaway from the finale, but I was just so moved emotionally that I'm not on here just BSing it. Like I really am. And it's a weird thing this morning where we're recording this Wednesday morning. I got here at like 8:45 and put it on. The episode's 42 minutes long and it's now 9:45. And so we literally turned this on the second I shut that off. And so I couldn't be more in the mode right now. I have so many things I want to say about the episode, but just know that extremely worked for me. I was moved, and that's coming from somebody who was not an X-Men or animated fan.
I was actually like, I was on the verge of getting kind of teary with the conversation you're talking about with Scott and Gene and Cable. Like it was
100%.
And you know what's crazy
I was choking up, dude, when he says the parent line that they have nothing on my folks.
Yeah. Well, especially just it's a great example like that, just that particular scene of how well this finale wrapped up these threads from the entire season. Like we started out talking about how emotional and effective that episode was with Madeline Pryor which was episode 3, I guess, when they have to send Nathan into the future. And it's like, that was such a great fulfillment of that, like the promise of that early episode.
Yes. And that was the part that Annika and I were a little bit poking fun of it not working the way it should have. And yet they brought it full circle to where now you're right. Not only did I feel it here, I will probably view that more fondly in the future.
Right.
Like if someone was watching it now, I'd be like, well, just wait. It kind of comes back around.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Madeline thing, I feel like at the time I viewed as just like, okay, this is one episode. They're doing this Inferno thing. And it felt kind of out of nowhere, the whole Madeline thing. Now, again, we loved that episode. This is not me rewriting history. But like even Madeline as a character kind of cast a shadow over the entire season. Like, she was pivotal in the Remember It episode, pivotal to Cable's role in the entire series, and just like a really, like a lot of depth to this like introduction of a clone, which is in comics really can be like the third rail where like once you start dealing with clones, it's like,
it's all over from there. It's all downhill. Yeah.
Like normally I'm like, okay, you've lost me. And a lot of the Marvel stuff from the 90s, that's the kind of excess that I think turned people off eventually, because it was just like, okay, this is getting excess. Ridiculous.
But the fact that they were able to do that 13 here, Lamborghinis and a Subaru station wagon. Sorry.
Man.
And a Subaru station wagon.
That movie.
That's the best line ever.
Those,
it's the American
these
way.
These are the sorts of things that we need to be covering on Screensaver. And we might finally have the time soon. But
okay, no more messing around. Gentlemen, how was the musical? Oh, it was spectacular. You totally undersold it. The pageantry, the costumes. Wow, what a musical. Not now.
We are, not hey, look bribe. At this. Watch this, watch this. For Steve...
There
see,
you go.
See?
Attaboy. Attaboy.
We're talking about the film The Other Guys.
Yes.
Starring Mark Wahlberg and
You
Will
said
Ferrell.
Excess. And anytime you say excess now, I think about that guy.
Okay.
But yes, honestly, that is one of my biggest takeaways. What you were saying about the Madeline Pryor thing. Mm. Not just Madeline Pryor, not just Cable. It feels like it did an unbelievable job of tying up a lot of those loose threads. Plot wise on a lot of stuff, like Bishop came back at the end to circle back on Madeline Pryor, and like, and basically the Scott and Jean drama has been worked out to where I was like, wow, I don't ever remember them having like a big moment where they straight up worked it out. And yet it felt so natural that we were at that ending scene.
Yeah.
Like somehow they did it. They like pulled one out, a fast one on me to where I'm like, yeah, now I totally bought that. And there's more, like obviously Storm coming back around. I thought the most badass line maybe ever was when Cable Bastion is saying, well, how'd that work for your mother? She's dead. And then he finally gets the mind control thing ripped off he finally gets the mind control thing ripped off. And Cable's first line is, how's your mother, Bastion? Cause she's dead. Got him. And that really pisses him off. Anyways, that came full circle kind of with Bastion's mother. I don't know.
No. I like, that's what, like, this is the kind of storytelling that I think Marvel has always been known for, like Marvel Studios. Like this is, it reminds me of the conversations we would have about Infinity War or Civil War.
Yep.
These movies where like there are so many things that they're having to juggle, and somehow it all clicks into place in a way that just makes sense. It doesn't feel forced. And I think that this is just, man. Yeah. I the way I see it, and I'm down for any approach, but I feel like there are kind of three buckets of things that I would like to talk about as we're looking at this episode big picture.
Okay. Let me just say this right here. This week, Marvel just officially recircled back on their branding, and they officially are leaning back into Marvel Studios for the films, Marvel Television for the live action shows, and then Marvel Animation. So it now has those titles above it. And partnered with that is the official announcement that Agatha All Along will be releasing on Disney Plus under Marvel Television on September 18th. I think it is 16 or 18, 18, 16, 18.
I think
September 18. And then Daredevil Born Again will be next March, I believe, is the official date. And it is 9 episodes long, which really, really quick tangent. My wife said, oh, is that too little? And I think, well, I was like, well, I think I wanted 10. But I think that's right about there. Remember, I've always kind of felt like 13 was maybe a touch too long in the Netflix series. Sure. If it's like 10, 50-minute episodes, that's the sweet spot. So I'll take 9. I would have taken 10. And then Ironheart's coming out next year as well. But they are leaning back into those different brandings. And because of that, I feel even more justified in our rankings when we do this. So I'm going to say I don't have to now rank this versus the other things just like that. We're going to rank Marvel Animation. We're going to rank Marvel Television, et cetera. But this is by far, not even close, the best Marvel Animation thing they've ever done.
Wow.
Which is actually not really that shocking. I don't even think it's that close. So like you said, as we go through this, just know it was so consistent with the high highs and basically no lows. So,
yeah, I mean, that's really interesting because I guess with that delineation, is it understood that Marvel television, like all the live action Marvel series, that those are supposed to take place within the MCU still? Like, that's still the understanding? And then I guess the animated stuff is
I don't think it has like anything
project
to do
by
with
project.
Right. I don't think it has anything to do with the timelines. But I see what
yeah,
you're getting
well,
at.
I just, no, I guess I, because I feel like the Marvel Studio, although I guess, yeah, here, this is a Marvel Studios project. So that already kind of would create confusion if people were looking at Marvel Studios as the,
well,
like ongoing.
I was thinking about this week. You know, it's already confusing is that, like you said, I put the X-Men 97 song on our Journey Through the MCU playlist and you texted me, well, it's not MCU. What's funny is a little bit, that's even changing because MCU to me used to just mean Marvel Studios did it.
Right.
Right. Now in the multiversal era with the animation stuff, it's not the same universe. So I guess what you're meaning is our playlist is the sacred timeline now.
Yeah. I mean, because otherwise, you know, we could go and add in like the Elfman Spider-Man stuff. And
well,
like
I know, but that's my point is like Marvel Studios made. Marvel Studios used to mean MCU, and now Marvel Studios is making X-Men 97. Right. So I think it's helpful to then just give it a different name, I guess, so that
no,
it's
I
not
think that's a good point.
Marvel Studios means that timeline.
Yeah.
But to your point, television then is a different name as well. But I think television is supposed to be the same timeline. So I don't know. That's a little confusing,
yeah.
I guess. But
I think you're like, to me, it would almost make more sense, I guess, to do Marvel Studios and Marvel Animation. But I do think that it's probably like it's nice to set those up as different things in that we've talked about this. Like I feel like the proliferation of the TV series made certain people feel like they couldn't go see the new Marvel movie because they hadn't watched whatever shows.
WandaVision for Multiverse of Madness or whatever.
Like by making it all one thing, I think it was overwhelming for folks. So it probably is nice, like to the extent Marvel is going to be saying like, these are the, like, these film, and this is kind of what I think should happen, I guess. Like the films are driving the narrative, but when you want additional context, like when you want to do a deep dive into a character, like this is what we're going to be doing in television. I think that that's probably, if that's their goal, yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
I used to think that was ridiculous, what you just said, but I've met too many people that fit that narrative and it blows my mind. But like, you know, our friend Kyle, who has been on this podcast before, when they first originally, like years ago, announced Disney Plus shows, his reaction on our text thread was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up with all that. And that was from like a fan, a diehard fan.
Yeah.
And I thought that at the time that was like, oh, come on, really? I thought you'd want more content. Now, years later, I'm kind of looking at it going, I think there are more people like that that just fell off the wagon because they felt like there's now too much to be invested in. So making those separate. And then, by the way, I didn't even bring up the Marvel Spotlight thing, which is what they were using, I think, for not for just for Echo. But yeah. So I guess that's even kind of different. So I guess television must mean sacred timeline, like a series that could go on for multiple seasons kind of thing. And then Spotlight is limited series like Chernobyl type vibe. Like it might not fit in entirely. It's in the sacred timeline, but it's just a quick little side glimpse, I guess.
Well, isn't there I feel like Greg was saying that something, that there was another Spotlight series announced recently. Is it Born Again? Is that?
No, that can't be it. That cannot. That's got to be Marvel Television. Answer me this. What was Werewolf by Night? Can you remember that?
That was
a holiday special. Special feature. Special presentation.
Special feature?
Special presentation.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's
what
it was.
So there's Spotlight and Special Presentation. So Special Presentation would be like a standalone short film, like under an hour, one episode, and Spotlight is side story, 5 to 6 episodes.
Which I kind of think that they are going to
merge.
Like, I think they should consolidate those moving forward. Yeah. Like, I think that the Spotlight banner should really encompass any kind of, like, Werewolf by Night should certainly be that, I think. Like,
yeah, sure.
That's actually, I think the original comic series that Marvel is taking the Marvel Spotlight name from heavily featured Werewolf by Night.
Special presentations Spotlights as well. Yes.
Yeah. And really,
Guardians,
like,
the holiday special. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea too of, I fact checked and I think that that's actually the first appearance of Werewolf by Night is in a Marvel Spotlight comic.
That's funny.
I didn't mean to get us
so off topic, by the way.
No. But I think this is important news. Like, cause I saw a lot of stuff came out over the last couple of days. There were, you know, the titles and graphics for like the title logos and things were released. And it looks great. The news that's coming out about the Agatha show is just increasingly encouraging. And
cool marketing again. Like I love the marketing. The marketing team has not been sleeping. They've been working. They've been grinding.
But I do think that it would be nice to see if Marvel's going to be doing like Spotlight things and Marvel television projects, because some projects are going to move the story along, like WandaVision, or maybe Loki is the best example. Like, Loki is kind of a it's cabined, but it's also a pretty core story to the multiverse saga, it would seem. We obviously haven't seen where that goes yet, but so it wouldn't make sense for that to be like a Spotlight.
No.
But I kind of like that if you're going like making most television things like something where you it's not necessarily required viewing. I mean, almost like X-Men 97, like it's so well done that you're going to watch it, but like obviously this has no impact on whether I can go see Deadpool and Wolverine and understand what's going on.
Even and amongst the television series, there are some that are more required viewing than others, right?
Like, yeah.
You don't have to see Moon Knight at this point at all if you don't want to.
Right. Which is, I think, like another one that could be, you know, in that same vein for sure as Echo or Werewolf by Night if we're kind of combining those. I guess my point is I would like to see if they're going to use these delineations, like pick one show a year of the like one or two that Bob Iger is saying we can expect. And like, if you want to do something that's like event television, like Loki, do like one of those a year. And then maybe like, if you're going to do another one, do it's like Spotlight. A character deep dive. I think that's a cool model.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, there's just been so much Marvel news coming out lately, and it all has been, for me at least, really encouraging.
You and I behind the scenes are getting really fired up again. Okay, we'll be right back with a ton of stuff from the X-Men 97 finale. By the way, I was listening to this week's episode of Smartless, and they made a reference to the thumbs up from Apple on their camera. So it happened to them too.
Wow.
The balloons and all that stuff, which is funny.
They're just like us. Okay. So before we finish our conversation about the X-Men 97 finale, I did want to take one more chance to plug our partners at Organic Price Books, in part because, man, I have been, as we're watching the X-Men movies, as we're watching X-Men 97, I've also been reading through the classic Chris Claremont X-Men comics, like I've talked about some. And it's just, it's a crazy thing that I've never actually sat down and read these and at least not all the way through like that. Like, I've read individual issues and I'm very familiar with a lot of the storylines because of how much they've been adapted. But these comics are so good. Like, I think I was kind of putting it off because they're older, and older comics can just kind of be a slog. They're really text heavy and it's just not. But sure. This has been like, it is like a 900 page omnibus, and I kind of have flown through it. And that combined with this here, which I've already talked about, the new X-Men, Grant Morrison Omni that heavily inspired the Remember It episode. I believe at this point, both of those, as well as a lot of other X-Men books, are available on organicpricebooks.com. So I would really encourage people to go and use our code FRIENDSFROMWORK, and you'll get an additional discount. Like we've said 1,000 times, it's already about as cheap as you will ever find these books, to the point where it's legitimately, this is kind of the most cost-effective way to read these comics.
That's got to be the biggest selling point. If you're going to buy comics already anyways, why not buy it from a place that is more local, and it's going to be cheaper than anywhere else you're getting it? So if you're getting it, you might as well get it from organicpricebooks.com. And if you're going to get it from organicpricebooks.com, you might as well then use promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK and save even more money.
True.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer.
It's a win-win-win.
Michael Scott, classic.
Organicpricebooks.com, code FRIENDSFROMWORK. And you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to walk through some of these comics in the comic book club side of things, which is firing on all cylinders again, baby. So
that's right, you're back.
Good time to get back into the comics world.
Three episodes in 4 weeks over on Friends From Work Plus now. Look at you guys.
We're on a roll.
After zero in 4 months. So it's a good pace.
I know.
Okay, you said you had some overarching points to X-Men 97 finale. Hit me. Start me with overarching point number one.
At least kind of categories here.
Okay, I love it.
I'd like to talk about the Charles and Eric side of this.
Okay.
I would like to talk about, obviously, the just kind of general final battle with Bastion, some of which we've already talked about with Sinister and all that. And then at the end, and I need to save it for the end because if I start now, it'll never stop. I would like to talk about the various cameos we got from other Marvel Universe characters.
Okay, absolutely.
Does that
Charles and Eric. Let me start. Charles and Eric.
Perfect.
I thought it was so refreshing and genius to, whenever you have a fight of this scale, this is kind of tying in the Bastion thing, I think you do need some little breathers or like pace markers, pace setters, and you have to slightly separate out some of the individual storylines in this fight, or like separate the team a la Infinity War, so you can kind of get these mini teams and mini storylines going on. Like, here's the thing. I've always said this with Star Wars, because Star Wars is often focused on like the grand scope of the battle. You get some of the coolest, like what I would call zoomed out, like space battles of, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of ships. And you can kind of CGI it in a way that it looks so unbelievably epic. But what's different about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is you're always focused on an individual person. It's Iron Man. It's not Iron Man and a giant army of 100,000 people. And so it's one of the things that we have complained about making Wakanda Forever feel a little bit small at the end, is like they don't have the grand scope thing nailed, except for, honestly, I think in Infinity War, where you have the superheroes like leading an army. I say that all to say, I found the Charles and Eric thing to be really refreshing, not only to be doing the deep dive emotionally, but to kind of take them off the board for a little bit. And the same way he took Wolverine off the board because of last week's episode, and focus it on the other characters while they're then doing this like pace setting, like you can check in, you know, spiritual, emotional deep dive. I thought it was fantastic. Like the development, like basically, I don't need to see them fighting again. I need to see that, in my opinion, from those characters.
That's so smart. Because you're right. That is what makes Infinity War works so well is that like you get flashes of the Battle of Wakanda, and then you get a flash to the team on Titan, and then you get a flash to Thor trying to make Stormbreaker. And doesn't that make that moment
of Thor showing up the greatest thing ever?
Right.
Like it literally maybe the highlight of the entire MCU is Thor arriving.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit what ended up happening, I think, with Magneto here. Like when Magneto finally got his moment, I almost cried.
Oh man, yeah. It's just that dialogue with them was so well done, especially like having watched the films recently. And our episode on Days of Future Past is coming out soon. So often, like as well as it's handled, and it is, we talk about like the Xavier Magneto relationship in the films being one of the stronger elements. I still think that you never get as much of both sides as you do in this show. Like there are times where it's like, man, from Magneto's perspective, he just keeps being proven right over and over. And on top of that, Xavier is doing things and has done things that make me kind of uncomfortable. Like where I'm like, I think I generally like agree with his perspective, but also he's not, you know, like Patrick Stewart's Xavier is kind of just like a 100% good guy. Like you're generally just like no real moral qualms. And here it's like him like taking hold of Magneto, and that final like pleas from Magneto before he like kind of breaks his psyche is really like, that was unnerving to me. And then the immediate follow-up with Xavier convincing him like, oh no, you can trust me, where I'm like, oh, but like, can he? Because like, you like violated him in this way, but then also like Magneto is trying to destroy the planet, so you were right to do that. It's like, it's just such a, it's a really, really nuanced relationship that they've teased out in just this season. I don't feel like it was that nuanced in the original 90s series. Like Magneto was much more just the villain that had a couple of like humanizing episodes every now and then. And here, like, I had no idea where we were going at the end of that conversation. I didn't know where Magneto was going to wind up. And I thought, you're right, like all of it culminated in such an epic, like last minute, like I get like sort of a last minute.
Magneto lives. It got me.
And even then, like, it is
your
kind of
your family
like
gave you
moment,
a different
actually.
Name. Do you remember it? Your family gave you a different name.
Like he, that's the thing is he, and you know, in Infinity War, when Thor shows up, it's so triumphant. But here it's both like triumphant and kind of tragic because Magneto is once again, like just like earlier in the season when he saved the humans from the Friends of Humanity, like the Sentinel mutant hating people. Like here, he is saving the humans from an asteroid impact that they caused by shooting missiles at a giant asteroid, which I'm also like when Cap, which I'm not getting into yet, but whenever he says to the president, like, we don't really know like what this will do. And they're kind of like, ah, yeah, but we should just try it. It's like, did anyone think like what happens if you shoot a giant asteroid out of the sky? And it just like, I feel like we kind of do know what's going to happen.
As the most intelligent people here, okay?
Like, no, I'm not. It's just like, again, from Magneto's perspective, like they are once again,
yeah,
like self-sabotaging, trying to take out the mutants. And then it's like, even like while the X-Men are up there trying to protect everyone from Bastion, like that's when they're firing missiles at them. It's just like a Like, that's the thing that the X-Men have that, as we've talked about, like, even the MCU side of it, like, we don't, they're doing a really great job of teasing out the fear and hated element of that team that heroes like the Avengers don't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Like, they're generally kind of trusted. Whereas mm-hmm. here, it's like, they're up there trying to literally save the world, and the president's firing missiles at them.
A la First Class a little bit. I love the line between them when Eric is just starting to remember, "You're Charles Xavier. You hurt me." And I loved Charles right away pushing back and saying, "You hurt me too, Eric. And yet we are both still always there for each other."
Yeah.
I was into that. Because you're kind of transitioning into how that was affected in the battle with Bastion. Now, yeah. Bastion seemingly is dead, which is anti what I said last week. However, I did think the execution of that was so perfect. First of all, to make him so strong at the end, mm-hmm. Even to have Nightcrawler acknowledge, like, oh man, surely this is like the whatever.
Future incarnate.
Yeah, future incarnate. But I did love the entire execution of the team realizing, mainly Scott, that they needed to try to basically save him or recruit him. Like, we're going to be different than what we're fighting. And then I love that Bastion didn't give in. For a second, I was like, don't have him kind of like turn to the good side. And
yeah.
I thought it was the coolest execution that right when they said that, like, we're going to do this because we can show humanity that we're better. That's when they see the missiles, and the line from Bastion is just so good. Cause he's like, no, humanity's going to go extinct. And Jean says, no, they're having babies. And some of them are even like us. And he says, that's the thing. Humanity would rather die than have kids like us. And as he's saying that, the missiles are coming at them, and they're like, oh, what clever one-liner as he's going out, you know, like, he's going to die.
Yeah.
But his last line is like, you still don't get it. Like, they're shooting missiles at you. Oh, humanity like would rather die such, than have kids like us.
Man, he became such the perfect villain for this season too. Like, because he is,
yeah, like, not like a mutant. He's kind of a human, yeah, but he's kind of a mutant, really.
And like, kind of represents like the machine takeover.
Yeah,
like all in one. And he was just such a hateable villain by the end. Like, which is what you want. Like, you want someone like between him and Sinister. It's just like these people are causing so much pain. Like, I love the lines from Beast and Jean about how it's like he's like enslaving these people and then treating them as though they're like on his team. Yeah, and it's right. Just, but which leads me to like the Phoenix moment, which was another just standout that you kind of called last time.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
shorter and than I thought, love that. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't like. I kind of like that she doesn't go fully back into Phoenix, because they did do that already in the 90s, and they did it pretty well. But just the kind of like, just enough to have the moment and to like turn the tide in the battle, and especially like the Sinister thing, because even in the 90s series, like, Sinister is just constantly ruining Scott and Jean's life. Like, it was like an ongoing thread. And then, like, again in this series, he's obviously done that in even more dramatic ways. And so that was such a satisfying moment for Jean to just not kill him, but to instead just kind of like rob him of all of his power, which is worse for him. It was just like brutal and a real like fist pump moment, I thought.
I'm already thinking about how I'm going to transition us, but 100%. I want to add to the battle talk here by saying, hot take alert. Incoming hot take alert. Cue Kevin Malone.
Warning.
Maybe it's not
warning,
that hot.
Warning.
But I thought the Newton brothers have done enough now to earn themselves some more projects within the Sacred Timeline.
Oh, you man, know,
on this podcast, you always want to be kind to everyone you meet. And when we have a chance to talk with composers, obviously it's so cool for us no matter what they've done, and we're going to treat them with respect. And I am so grateful and respectful of what these people are able to create. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. anyone who's creating something out of nothing, I think, deserves some credit. It's a really impressive feat. That being said, not all of the scores are equal in my mind. I'm going to still treat them like equal, but certain right. ones move me more emotionally than others. And yeah. so not only was talking to the Newton brothers really cool, but I think it's been backed up with their work. I'm now saying, okay, I think they need to be elevated a tier.
Yeah.
Did you listen to the end? I have studio monitors here, but I mean, I think part of the reason I was getting choked up with that Toy Story 3 type, you know, asteroid going down thing was because of the score.
Yeah. It's like, they're in the John Pisano realm now, where it's like, they knocked it out of the park so much that I can't imagine folks within Marvel Studios are ignoring it. Like I they need to be leveled up to score. Like I would love to see them score a Marvel film.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about that right now, because, you know, we talked about with John Pisano, a lot of those producers and directors have their guys already. So it's really hard to break through. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if Thor 5 was made, it's not going to be by Taika, but if it was by Taika, you feel like he'd already kind of have one of those people lined up, Mark Mothersbaugh or Giacchino, just because that's the way it works. But there's gotta be space. Like, maybe Moorhead and Benson, maybe there's like, maybe they do a project, man. And they're not locked into somebody yet, potentially.
Although they, like the stuff they did with Natalie, I'm like, well, I want to see them.
Totally. But Natalie was still there in season one. So I don't know that.
Yeah, that's true.
Necessarily was the partnership chosen from them. My point is, I'm just trying to find a gap where they could get in. Not that, I mean, Natalie, what she did was unbelievable. I'm not saying that.
No. But yeah, I just, there was that moment where they were doing like the choral X-Men theme.
Yes.
And it was just unreal.
They covered a lot of different stuff too. That's the other thing.
And
throughout the show,
I thought in general, this last episode, there were some really great character moments for almost everybody. Like, even Morph had like that little moment with Logan that I thought was like meaningful, like where he like
turns into Jean
just because he knows that's like what Logan needs to hear. And I love their friendship and how much, like, because again, I think I've talked about this, but in the 90s series, Morph, they think he dies in the very first episode. And that's something that Logan carries a lot of guilt for through the whole series until they finally get him back. And so, like, there's a lot of history there. But my point being, everyone kind of had a moment, which made me think, like, on top of listening to the Newton Brothers score and thinking, this is incredible, I really loved hearing Holly and Isaac have their moments as Bishop and Jubilee, because it was like, again, having talked to them, there's the added, like, you sort of want to root for it, but also, like, they both just did some really great work in this episode.
Shout out to Isaac giving us the intro to this episode again. You're not wrong. You could literally go through each character, because I also thought it was kind of moving to get the Roberto and Jubilee moment again. A little bit of healing there. That one worked. We talked about Cable and his family, Scott and Jean. That worked. We talked about Morph getting this quick moment with Wolverine. That worked. Obviously, Charles and Eric. That worked. Yeah. Scott even just verbally sticking up for Charles was kind of a thing, because he was the one that just stopped him. So that was kind of a moment. And then I think that leads us perfectly into our final overarching point, which is that you got tiny little moments with a gajillion characters. And
oh my God.
They didn't give any of them lines early on, I think, because that's the safe way of like giving us the Easter egg without committing to what they sound like or what they say. But I started jotting them down because it got ridiculous. And I think Black Panther or King T'Chaka did get some lines.
Iron Man and Cap.
Cap. Daredevil, Black Panther. Did you catch the one quick Reed Richards thing from Morph?
Yeah. Yeah, from Morph. Yeah. Morph,
when they're getting blown out of the ship, he turns into Reed Richards and uses his stretchy arms to grab hold of something. I mean, that's just objectively really fun. And by the way, I've never seen Black Panther in an alternate suit because my only knowledge of Black Panther is from the films. But
yeah,
there's a video game coming out. Have you seen the trailer for this video game with Captain America and Black Panther? But it's supposed to be set in like the 50s, I think, or something, or the 40s. And so it's actually technically T'Chaka. And in that video game, T'Chaka has a cape. And I've never seen that from Black Panther. And then here, T'Chaka had a cape.
Yeah.
Mind blown. Yeah.
And that is... And
that must be a thing, apparently.
T'Challa originally had a cape, like in his first appearance.
Okay, see, I would not know that, obviously, but that was cool.
But I love the kind of collar, like that. That was a later addition, I think. But then I like, because I saw it first, the like gray when he was on the screen, and I thought this must be T'Chaka, and then with the costume like that, which is then like opens up a lot of questions about where T'Challa is, and like if T'Chaka's the Black Panther, has T'Challa not become Black Panther yet in this animated universe? And there were like the Doctor Strange scene I thought was really interesting because he's performing surgery but using the like using his magic.
Oh, I don't think I must have missed that.
Oh, it was like a blink and you miss it thing. But yeah, you should go back and watch. It
might have been literally that I was taking a note and then looked up and I didn't see that at all. Stephen Strange was in this.
I wonder, like, I think maybe it's my like headcanon there is that with all these hospitals shutting down with the EMP, like maybe he's having to
use magic.
Like that's the way he thinks he can help the most. But
I thought besides the fun Easter egg nature of it, the biggest takeaway is what you said earlier, which is just that you get a sequence of Iron Man and Captain America with the government. So somehow humanity or Stephen Strange, if you're just informing me of this, he's using magic to perform surgery. So for some reason, humanity has found an ability to, you know, separate these different individuals into who's kind of okay and trusted and who's not, because they hate the mutants, but they are totally trusting of Captain America and Iron Man and or Stephen Strange to use magic to operate, you know? And that, again, we're going to have a whole episode on that, but that is the balance that the MCU is going to have to find eventually. And that's going to be difficult.
Well, and I think one of the things that's difficult about it in the MCU is because it's been going on so long, and because we've had so many different movies, like we know that there are like many sorcerers, right? Like there are all of these, we've seen a lot of, like we have Asgardians, we have Skrulls, we have like whole populations of non-human people that have shown up where it's like sorcerers are still human, but you know, it's like, whereas here, I think what's nice is they've even the amount of people they showed is kind of, it's both cabined and they're all mostly people that have like some, like, you know, Spider-Man would probably be the most like mutant-esque of all of them.
Right.
But otherwise, it's mostly like,
I think Hulk just people too. Yeah.
Yeah. And Hulk. But I think that makes it easier to view those as like, it's almost like those are people that have gotten the ability to do things to defend humans.
Yeah,
like correct. They are humans that are working with humans.
It's humans' answer to the mutant problem.
Yeah.
Well, we have these humans still that learn this special ability, whatever it is, to stop you from.
and that's what like, I mean, the moment that I was the most excited about that was certainly like not even a blink if you miss it. I think a lot of people just wouldn't even know what they were looking at. But there's a moment at the very, towards the end when the asteroid's coming down where it shows people standing outside a window on the street looking at the news coverage of the asteroid.
Yeah.
And it is Peter Parker and Mary Jane watching it. And again,
see, didn't
most people,
that.
Unless Golly. You watched it, like I was telling, cause I was talking to Greg after the episode dropped and like, he asked if I caught that. And I told him that like, when I am old and gray and have forgotten my own name, I will still remember the character design for Peter Parker and Mary Jane from that 90s show.
Oh,
it
boy.
Was like this, oh, like, shot of dopamine.
Oh boy.
But like I bring that up here because that's one thing that show really explored. Like the 90s, the real pillars of that universe were the X-Men and Spider-Man series. You did have Hulk, Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer, and Iron Man series, but none of those really had the staying power. And a lot of those characters appeared more in the Spider-Man series, which was really cameo heavy. But Spider-Man was always like being called a mutant, like in that show, because people just kind of assumed he was. And then there's a whole storyline where he goes and like consults Professor X because he thinks he is a mutant and is mutating. And I just think like that is the way you kind of should do it. Like you almost, if you're going to have mutants, you almost have to treat mutants as the baseline superpowered people. And then everyone else that has superpowers needs to have some unique origin that separates them from the mutants. And and that show did that really well. The other thing that and apparently Bo confirmed this, the 90s Spider-Man series ended on like something of a cliffhanger, where Peter is I won't get into all of it because I feel like we're maybe going to watch through all of this in our Saturday morning cartoon stuff anyway. But there was always a question about at the end of that series whether Peter and MJ do in fact reconnect and wind up together. And so not only was it a fun Easter egg, it's actually kind of a big like 30 years later continuity update in letting us know like where Spider-Man is and what's going on, which all gets me like again really excited and hoping that there might be a Spider-Man version of X-Men 97 at some point. But I guess they're already doing a Spider-Man animated show, so maybe that's too much to ask for.
I want you to get what you want. I just want Robbie to get it, okay? My final thought on this episode, I audibly applauded when I saw 3000 BC Egypt, because I right away knew, okay, we're doing apocalypse. Here we go. Yeah. This is where we're going. But I actually like laughed. I went like, oh, here we go. Okay. And I don't know. I loved it. And I loved the follow-up of the future. I thought that was a sick twist. So Scott and Jean go so far in the future to where Nathan was sent originally as a child. So now maybe they could actually live with child Nathan for a little bit.
Yeah, man, it is like I was curious where we were going after this, and it's pretty clear that they're doing the Age of Apocalypse event, and that makes so much sense.
And I syncs up with where we're at in our rewatch journey.
True.
Right now.
I'm curious. We didn't get a flash of Logan at the end, right? Do we know where Logan went or what his status is?
I can't say certainly, but I don't think we did.
That's because I'm still curious. Like, is all of the adamantium out of him? Is that what we're assuming?
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay. There's another like big, you know, the post-credit scene or mid-credit scene with Apocalypse in Genosha, like in modern day.
Mm-hmm.
That's also setting up an element of that storyline that I kind of, I guess I'd thought about early on after Remember It, but had kind of forgotten But I mean, it seems like we're going to get a resurrected Gambit.
Oh, based really? On,
I mean, that was my takeaway. Just because he's holding Gambit's card, and he's saying so much death. And this is where normally I don't want to like give anything away, and I don't think it really is because they do their own twist on these things. But in the comics, there is a period where Gambit is resurrected by Apocalypse as basically like a
come on. Come on.
I'm saying it's out there. It's known. I don't know if that's what's happening. I assume it is. I mean, holding the, because Apocalypse has like the four horsemen and one of them is death. And so the fact that he's holding Gambit's card and saying so much death, I think is a pretty clear like wink and nod that Apocalypse is potentially bringing Gambit back as one of his horsemen.
All right.
But
that could who be, knows? I guess.
It could be misdirection, but
we are getting a season two for sure. I'm guessing next year. I don't know that. Someone can fact check me on that.
It takes so long to make these animated shows. It's like it's really hard because like Invincible, it takes so long for new episodes to come out because it's just
a lot of
like we talked
parts.
About with AC Bradley back in the day. So I hope it's soon.
So I think for us, I think it's safe to say this is the best animated show they've done. So I think our rankings would be X-Men 97, I guess season one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we went What If season two, and then What If season one, three. But yeah. I thought it was just absolutely magnificent. I think you and I now, this is kind of weird to say because we've been in this for so long, literally 10 weeks, maybe 12 weeks of this. I think you and I are now next time starting to shift gears a little bit back toward the sacred timeline, right? We're going to be doing some rewatch stuff on the MCU front, which is going to be really, I think it's going to be crazy refreshing to actually get back into some phase four stuff just because we've been in X-Men world for so long. Like it's going to feel foreign to rewatch Shang-Chi, like stuff like that. And you and I are wanting to do just like a generic MCU catch-up episode and a X-Men, how can they fit in the MCU type brainstorm session all on the main feed. So I think we're kind of shifting gears now back towards the sacred timeline. That's what I was going to say. And I wanted to add one last thing before I close. I've been a little bit in merchandise world. I shipped out a lot of our Loki Friends from Work sweatshirts, which is awesome. We have a little bit of merch left. I'm staring at it. Different items, like maybe five or six different items, various sizes of different items. I'd love to get rid of it. Like this shirt, for example, although I don't know if I have any of these left. By the way, how sick is this?
It's so great.
I mean, Jacoby has nailed these merch designs. I'm basically wearing a Thor Love and Thunder shirt, but it says Friends from Work, and it looks identical, and it's awesome. Like, it's awesome. Yeah. It fits comfortably. Like, I'm not just wearing it for show. Look, I'm literally wearing this. Like, this is the shirt I wear.
And the Marvel 90s logo tee are my favorites, I think.
So I have our classic tees left. I have the Marvel 90s one, this one. I have a few of the Guardians of the Galaxy inspired like banana cream dope thing, which is another one I wear. So that's all awesome. I have some hoodies left, but we also have beanies with the dopest Friends from Work logo. So like as we start getting closer and closer to cooler weather in the fall, maybe get your beanie, some tumblers for cold or warm drinks, just incredible merchandise items from Friends from Work. And I want to say, if you're into that thing, but Friends from Work merch, or you already have it, or it's not your thing, then check out nerdriot.shop because they also have some incredible just nerd merch, including some new runs of Deadpool and Wolverine stuff. I think they have a shirt that's literally Let's Effing Go. And they now have Fantastic Four merch starting to come out. So in preparation for the new projects, which by the way, I've said this 10 trillion times, 2025 is just going to rip. 2025 is going to rip on so many levels. Like I'm as excited for this year, this next year as I've been in a while. So get your nerd merch, get your Friends from Work merch and just be all set. Nerdriot.shop or the FFWpodcast.com. And if you go to nerdriot.shop, use promo code Friends from Work. Robbie, I'm excited to shift into MCU world. How about you?
Man, I'm excited to get back into the rewatch. I'm also excited to start fully prepping for Deadpool and Wolverine. Not, I mean, we've been prepping for it and that we've been going through our X-Men rewatch, but I think we got to have some discussions about what to expect there. We haven't really had time to break down all of the trailer footage that we've gotten, the Empire articles and stills that have been released.
Yeah,
like there's a lot that I think we could dig into because we just still know so little about what this movie's actually doing, even down to like we've mentioned the versions of the characters that we're going to be getting. That I think that could be really fun. And also to kind of piggyback on your merch comment, one thing that I was thinking, ahead of No Way Home, we had those sweatshirts for that had the kind of like Amazing Spider-Man design that a lot of folks I think enjoyed
sold out,
wearing
sold out,
to the theaters.
Sold out, unfortunately.
But, you know, here's the thing. Even in the summer, and I've experienced this lately going to the Spider-Man screenings, like movie theaters are still mega cold. And if you are looking for like a theater outfit, it is like with the level of TVA crossover here in Deadpool Wolverine.
Good point.
Our TVA sweatshirts kind of fit the bill. So if that's the extra motivation you need, where you want to have like, because look, everyone's going to be going to the theater with their like Wolverine and their Deadpool stuff, and that's fine. Yeah. But if you really want to like, you want to stand out, you want to be in the know and doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Friends from work, TVA sweatshirt.
And for all the people podcast. Who recently bought one, send me some pics. I like to post them online. Like Matt on Discord has his profile picture wearing the sweatshirt and it looks incredible and I love it. I want to see more of them and I'll post them on our social media at the FFW podcast. Yeah, I'm with you. The AC still works there. The AC still works on planes a lot of times. Like even when it's warm, sometimes you'll have a long flight and all of a sudden I'm like, man, I need a hoodie on to take a nap.
Yeah. Let's grow together.
Let's grow together. Yep. So just kind of overarching big picture, we're mid-May right now. The back half of May and June are going to be MCU, Sacred Timeline, rewatch, that kind of discussion. Almost all of July is going to be Deadpool. Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2. Hopefully you and I get to see Deadpool 3 early. And so there might be a preview/hype episode. Then our initial reactions to Deadpool and Wolverine, which you and I are trying to make really special plans for. So who knows? And then I think August is going to be decompressed month, like kind of just slow down, get our bearings. Like we just ramped crazy intensely. I think we've been putting out like crazy amounts of episodes. And then right away in September again, September 18, we'll kick off a new series with Agatha. So back in the MCU. So
yeah, which I'm also looking forward to just as like the first time because Echo, because of the way it released, we didn't do week to week coverage of. And so this is really going to be the first time that we're doing a like week to week MCU, you know, Sacred Timeline live action show discussion since Loki.
It's weird to think about
almost a year.
Right. It's weird to think about like you look at the slate of 2024 and realize there's not that much content relative to what Marvel has been giving us. But when you start thinking of it, like I just said, it's amazing how quickly our entire year can kind of fill up. Like if Agatha takes us almost to Christmas, then we'll be right back into like holiday breaks and the friendlies next year. And then, you know, the 2025 slate. So even if you look at like a 9-episode thing from Daredevil, well, that's 9 weeks plus 2 movies. That's 3 or 4 weeks around that. And then another show in the fall, another 10 weeks, you know, that's almost the whole year. So it's crazy how fast it fills up. Anyways, it's all going to be fun stuff. It's going to be great. All right. That's it. That's all I got.
Well, it's over.
Yeah, the series is over. I had so much fun. We're going to be reflecting on this for a while. Thanks for listening. Yep. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and we'll see you right back here on Friends from Work.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tom products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tompounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.